When I awoke one morning, there was a feeling in the air. Everything was quiet, things were different everywhere. The Wobblies were back again with Joe Hill at the mic. When all the minimum wage workers went on strike, there was no one flipping burgers. All the grills were cold. Onion rings were in their bags. Fries were growing mold. There were no baristas at Starbucks asking how many shots would you like. When all the minimum wage workers went on strike. There was no one pumping gasoline, no one driving from town to town. No one at the register, all the highways were shut down. Cars were stuck in the garage, CEOs on bikes. When all the minimum wage workers went on strike. The fruit was falling off the trees, no one to load the trucks. Corn was rotting on the stalk, no farmhands to shuck. Workfare workers were hanging at home, spending the day with their tykes. When all the minimum wage workers went on strike. Yuppie parents were housebound, their nannies left the job. Walmart workers said enough of our labor has been robbed. The Foot Locker was locked up, the boss had to take a hike. When all the minimum wage workers went on strike. When I awoke one morning, there was a feeling in the air. Everything was quiet, things were different everywhere. The Wobblies were back again with T-Bone at the mic. When all the minimum wage workers went on strike. When all the minimum wage workers went on strike.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Acts of Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just catching up with us, we're listening to NSA whistleblower Russ Tice go on record about the revelations and names of official culprits involved in the NSA's illegal practices.
You put yourself in the position of someone with all the experiences that you have had, okay? And you have this information. I have people in the Department of Defense that are in this position, okay? Russ, I have people within CIA, you know, on the analyst side who are in this position, and they are savvy. They are a billion times savvier than me, but they are stuck because if you were to pick with your experiences, and you work with the NSA, for the NSA in the past, and you want to pick five places and say, okay, that way I will ensure that it will be published, and let's say at least one of them would publish it, how do you go about selecting those?
That's a good question, because, you know, what we thought were safe havens for this stuff we found have either been compromised or the government has basically shut them down. You know, I don't know the answer to that. I try to do the best I could to find an organization that is truly unbiased. And I hate to say this, but you almost have to go out of this country to find anyone who's willing to, you know, to tell the truth, because now could our government put pressure on another government? I think we've seen cases of that happening too, where our government has put pressure on I think we've done that in England, where we put pressure on the English government to shut down a whistleblower that might touch on something that we're involved with as well. So you have to be careful. And unfortunately, I don't know the best answer to that question, Sibel.
Neither do I. And because of that, we are in this position of more than a dozen or so whistleblowers that we have to be whistleblowers, okay? And I don't dare giving them an advice and jeopardize either, you know, their situation or even more importantly, the information. And that is, you want to get this information out. And they're like, well, can't be made, you know, we can get it to you. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm the last person because I know how I'm being watched. And that is my phones and my, you know, because even though everybody's information gets sucked in, I know that there are people who are in the top priorities. And unfortunately, you and I are on both on that list. So therefore, we are in the same position. And back to you, Peter.
Okay. Thank you, Sibel. And just as a note, in the last 2 weeks, I've received a contact from a very high-level whistleblower in a law enforcement agency. I've had a discussion with an attorney who didn't name the individual he's been contacted by, but he allowed us out. It's a pretty high-level exposure in the intelligence community. And in both cases, I told them to be extremely careful and told them the Mark Klein story so that they have a better understanding what can happen to a whistleblower when you go to the media. And Russ, I want to return to something you were talking about a moment ago, which is the partisanship of the current divide. And the polls very carefully show exactly what you're talking about, that 6-7 years ago, it was Democrats who were most concerned about Fourth Amendment issues and the expansion of the surveillance operations. And now it is flipped, where Democrats tolerate it, they consider it to be legal, and now Sean Hannity, with apparently no injury to his spine, has done a complete backflip on
Bill O'Reilly too
on the Fourth Amendment. And of course, you know, I welcome all to the fight for the Fourth Amendment. Some people's motives are a little cleaner than others, and I want to ask you next about the work of Lichtblau and Risen at the New York Times, because Charlie Savage, who is a good reporter, he came from the Boston Globe, joined the Times a few years ago, appears to have been assigned most of these whistleblower cases. He has been doing most of the coverage of the Manning court martial. And at the end of the first week of the Snowden leaks, Lichtblau and Risen, their byline resurfaced in the Times. And it's the first I've seen in recent weeks. And they published a story where they identify Yahoo as a company that wrangled with the NSA when it was presented with an order to provide user information. And they published an excerpt from a FISA court ruling in 2008. And I'd like to read this quote to you. They don't name the judge who is responsible for this opinion. But quote, and Yahoo has apparently challenged on the Fourth Amendment basis the rights of its users that the NSA is presenting an unreasonable search order. So the court called that worry overblown and went on to say, notwithstanding the parade of horribles trotted out by the petitioner, it has presented no evidence of any actual harm, any egregious risk of error, or any broad potential for abuse, adding that the government's efforts to protect national security should not be frustrated by the courts. Now, I'd like to break down the three elements of this complex sentence, that the petitioner has presented no evidence of any actual harm. And this is one of the ways that they have kept all of these constitutional challenges out of court, by saying you can't prove that you were harmed.
Right.
But we know in the Al Haramain case that they were able to prove that there was a wiretap, an illegal wiretap of protected communications involving attorneys. And yet the court is maintaining that there has been no provable harm. What's your reaction to that, Russ?
Well, and then of course they fall back to sovereign immunity and or state secret privilege, you know, which is, you know, they're falling back to more defenses. The courts are sitting on their hands. Now, ultimately, I think what's between the lines, when you listen to that, is they're saying there's no abuse out there. There's no real abuse. Well, there is abuse out there. You know, I've already said that they've gone after journalists and news agencies and that sort of thing. But I haven't said who else they go after. And I'll hit you with that right now if you are sitting down and you can keep your mouth from going wide open.
Both of my ears are wide open, Russ.
Okay. They went after, and I know this because I had my hands literally on the paperwork for these sort of things. They went after high-ranking military officers. They went after members of Congress, both Senate and the House, especially on the intelligence committees and on the Armed Services Committees and some of, and judicial. But they went after other ones, too. They went after lawyers and law firms, all kinds of heaps of lawyers and law firms. They went after judges. One of the judges is now sitting on the Supreme Court that I had his wiretap information in my hand. Two are former FISA court judges. They went after State Department officials. They went after people in the executive service that were part of the White House, their own people. They went after anti-war groups. They went after U.S. companies that do international business, business around the world. They went after U.S. banking firms and financial firms that do U.S. International business. They went after NGOs that, like the Red Cross and people like that go overseas and do humanitarian work. They went after a few anti-war civil rights groups. So, you know, don't tell me that there's no abuse, because I've had this stuff in my hand and looked at it. And in some cases, I literally was involved in the technology that was going after this stuff. And when I said to Overman, I said, my particular thing is high tech, and what's going on, you know, is the other thing, which is the dragnet. The dragnet is what Mark Klein is talking about, the terrestrial dragnet. Well, my specialty is outer space. I deal with satellites and everything that goes in and out of space. I did my spying via space. So that's how I found out about this.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Bonjour, madame et messieurs. We're the French military. My name is General Malaise.
And I am Major Ennui. And we are sick and tired of your comedians making fun of the integrity and courageousness of the French fighting force.
For example, I heard this one the other day. How many Frenchmen does it take to defend Paris? No one knows. It's never been tried. Not funny at all.
No, or this knock-knock joke I heard the other day. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
I give up.
The U.S. The U.S. thinks its army is the best, but my troops can stand for hours with their arms up and no rest.
France's tanks are the first to go only in reverse.
And our guns, you cannot top 'em.
They don't go off when we drop 'em.
We'll just sit on the bench. After all, folks, we're the French.
When the fighting starts, we look for an egress.
And when the war is through, we still will spit on you.
What a mess. We detest the U.S. Here in France, there's no chance we will ever change our stance. When I heard there was a war, I had to put on plastic pants.
A purple heart I once earned when my armpits got sunburned.
Want to see a Frenchman cower?
Just attack us with a shower.
Hey, we're French. We're not dumb. We're like Springsteen, born to run.
We'd sacrifice our king if this was chess.
If this is World War III, we'll run like weak old Brie.
Can't care less, but we stress Jerry Lewis is the best. We digress. We detest the U.S.
Vive la France!
And now back to Russ Tice, NSA whistleblower, tells all.
Now, Russ, the targeting of the people that you just mentioned, top military leaders, members of Congress, intelligence community leaders, and the, it was intelligence committees, let me correct that, not intelligence community, and then executive branch appointees. This creates the basis and the potential for massive blackmail.
Absolutely. And remember, we talked about that before, that I was worried that that the intelligence community now has sway over what is going on. Now, here's the big one. I haven't given you any names. This was in summer of 2004. One of the papers that I held in my hand was to wiretap a bunch of numbers associated with a 40-some-year-old wannabe senator from Illinois. You wouldn't happen to know where that guy lives right now, would you? It's a big White House in Washington, D.C. That's who they went after. They went after, and that's the president of the United States now. And they went after, I can give you names of a bunch of different people they went after that I saw. The names and the phone numbers of like Congress, not only the names, but what looked like staff people too, and their staffs. And not only their Washington offices, but back home in their congressional, you know, little offices they have at their homes, you know, their home state offices and stuff like that. This thing is incredible what NSA's done. They've basically turned themselves, in my opinion, into a rogue agency that has J. Edgar Hoover capabilities at a monstrous scale on steroids.
And so, Russ, I have been one of those people who noticed that they quietly extended the 10-year statutory term for FBI Director Mueller by 2 years. Now, he does appear to be leaving, and they've appointed James Comey, who was one of the architects of the legalization of what they called warrantless wiretapping. He was at the center of a lot of the dark side moves, as Dick Cheney put it, during the Bush administration. And for Obama to appoint him to provide continuity, and I use that word advisedly, at the FBI, that suggests that J. Edgar Hoover's scheme, where he collected dirt on various leaders so that he could leverage them at critical times, that has not ended, or that if there was a break, that it has possibly resumed under Mueller and, by extension, this new nomination of Comey, who is one of the old boys.
Yes, he's one of the old boys. And remember, this thing is bipartisan. They went after Democrats and Republicans. This was the stuff, terrestrial stuff I was looking at with my group of colleagues, and they were getting this information. They were getting it from burn bags at NSA is where they were getting the information from. But, you know, here we are looking at this stuff, and we're just, you know, going, oh, my God, how do we, you know, what are we going to do here? I didn't know who was involved. Now, later, I've been told by my source that they believe it was Dick Cheney who was the mastermind of this and going to NSA and getting this stuff from remember that system I told you back in our last talk that didn't have accountability. The system was all set up, but didn't have written into the software the accountability that a normal system would have, so that they could easily go into this system to plug in all these names and or not names but numbers. What they had were the numbers, and then they plugged in the system, and the system would show the number and the banks of digital data recorders and all the databases that the stuff was going to. That was what was going on, and it was this stuff at this high level. I mean, I was sitting there. I did an interview, I guess, with Larry King, and I had Dianne Feinstein and Orrin Hatch sitting next to me, and I knew that both of them had been targeted by NSA,
mm-hmm.
and they're sitting right next to me, and of course they're defending everything that's going on. And I you know, I wondered, you know, I'm thinking, you know, should I say, oh, by the way, guys. You know, you too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I had the FBI on me, like, you know, I had to be very careful back then what I said. And then when I went to testify to Congress, my sources at NSA, everything I was telling Congress was going right to NSA. Everything I told Congress in private, closed-door, classified session was going right to NSA. So I knew I had to be careful what I told Congress because they were trying to hang me, too. So you know, where could I go? You know,
and just a quick aside about that, you're referring to SCIFs, these secure compartmentalized information rooms that are all supposed to be swept for bugs, and that's the only place where you're allowed to discuss classified information. But what you're suggesting to me is that the SCIFs are wired for the NSA.
No, what was happening? I don't know that, but what was happening is the people that I was talking to were literally running right to NSA and telling NSA everything I was telling them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my way of defeating that was I discussed a couple of problems that had happened in some black programs, and I said here's the problem, this black program, some abuses that happened in these super secret black programs that I really can't talk about. And what that did is that took the pressure off of me, because then they said, oh, this guy doesn't know anything about that, because all he wanted to talk to us about some abuses in this black program stuff. But that's not true. I did know about everything else, and I was covering my ass because I knew they were trying to put a rope around my neck. And And everything I was saying was going right to NSA and the Department of Injustice. And you know, and like I said, at the time I had I couldn't move without banging into two or three FBI morons. So it's this thing is potentially basically the intelligence community run amok and turning into a rogue collection of an agency that's there to protect its own self-interests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I noticed that the intelligence community didn't have its budget cut for the sequester. Gee, what happened there?
Jim Bamford, who is acknowledged worldwide as the expert on the NSA, published a profile of General Alexander at Wired Magazine recently. And in a prologue to it, he described General Alexander as the most powerful man on Earth. And that because of the collection capabilities that he has globally through the NSA, because of the cyber warfare capabilities that he commands in the new and expanding cyber unit at the Pentagon, and it is unusual for him to have both of these very, very powerful jobs, I'll add. Do you agree that he is the most powerful, and what level of risk do you assign to that?
Let me give you another name. Inside NSA, the inside security is called Q Group. It used to be called M Group. And these are the guys that vet all NSA employees and put them through, you know, outrageous security checks and polygraphs. As a matter of fact, all my people that I talk to have had to learn how to beat polygraphs, and they've all been successful in doing it because it's easy to beat a polygraph. And that's something that if I was still in the business and I was wanting to get back into this sort of thing, that I'd learn how to beat a polygraph before I did anything. But the guy in charge of security is a guy named Kemp Enser, and this guy he's akin, his attitude and the way he operates is akin to the Cheka under the Soviet Union under Stalin, or the Stasi in East Germany. This guy is vicious. This guy, he's a real piece of work. And that means this guy has control over the security clearances of everybody, including the IG's office and including everybody that works in Alexander's office, too. So there is one, you know, and yes, Alexander is incredibly powerful, but there are people behind the scenes like this guy, Kemp Enser. I call him the kennel master because, you know, of his kennel full of rabid dogs. I call the people in Q Group the rabid dogs, but that's my little nickname for him.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, the agency and security at the agency are incredibly powerful, and of what the information they wield, and then ultimately somebody like Enser, the information that they have on their own people.
And Russ, Sabell introduced me to the concept of the deep state, the shadowy people who really run the government, who don't stand for election, who aren't known to the public. Is that what we're seeing here? Is Alexander running the deep state?
You know, I'd like to say no, but my fear is that the answer could be yes. You know, do I know if they're blackmailing our elected officials and our judges? I mean, the one Supreme Court judge was Alito when he was up for confirmation that I saw his paperwork for his wiretapping. So I mean, they've I was told that they by my NSA guys that they have all nine of the Supreme Justices. He was just being tapped at that time because he was coming up to the bench. So this is just incredible that they have the ability. Now, you know, everybody has some kind of little dark thing in a closet at some point in their life that maybe they don't want known. What is going on here? What is going on? And you see people that would normally you'd think would fight this, like Feinstein and some of the others, and all of a sudden they're just sitting there and they're capitulating with all this. Are they being blackmailed? I don't know the answer to that. But NSA, like I said the last time, is an agency that is out of control, and they must be stopped. This nonsense that there's no abuse, I think, is just plain foolish. We know that any time you give anybody this kind of power, the human tendency is to abuse it. Even the most lily pure person to start out with, when it's like the Lord of the Rings, when Frodo offers it up to Galadriel, and she fire starts shooting her eyes out with the power that she could have with that ring. This is what's going on. Power corrupts, and ultimate power corrupts ultimately, and NSA now has ultimate power.
It can happen in a moment. Sometimes it does, when what could be is, and what shouldn't be was. There are times when you gotta stand steady. There are other times when you gotta be ready. field is what you do. Some moments are coming, others have came, and then there are those when you just gotta take aim.
Now for something completely different.